Milton Friedman stood just 5 feet tall, yet his intellectual shadow looms over modern economic thought like few others. This unassuming man with thick glasses and a ready smile became both a lightning rod for controversy and an intellectual hero who fundamentally altered our understanding of markets, money, and freedom. His journey from the son of Jewish immigrants running a small dry goods store to becoming the world's most influential economist reveals how powerful ideas can reshape society. When Larry Summers, raised in a household of devoted Keynesian economists, evolved from viewing Friedman as a devil figure to developing enormous respect for his ideas, it reflected the broader transformation Friedman himself had engineered in economic thinking. Whether you see him as the brilliant mind who tamed inflation and unleashed prosperity, or the ideologue whose free market fundamentalism widened inequality, taking a position on Friedman means taking a position on the last half century of economic life. The Great Depression shaped Friedman's economic thinking. While most economists blamed market failures and insufficient government spending, Friedman developed a different view. With Anna Schwartz, he documented how the Federal Reserve's monetary contraction transformed an ordinary recession into catastrophe. Their research revealed the money supply fell by a third between 1929-1933, not from inherent market instability, but from policy failures by the very institution created to prevent banking panics. This insight became the cornerstone of Friedman's monetary revolution. Inflation is always and everywhere a monetary phenomenon, he famously declared, challenging the Keynesian view that inflation stemmed primarily from excessive demand or wage pressures. Friedman showed how changes in money supply affected economic activity with long and variable lags. Like watering a garden, too much money eventually causes inflation, but timing depends on conditions. This debate had profound implications. If Keynesians were right, government could fine-tune the economy through spending. If Friedman was right, such precision management would likely worsen conditions. Several brilliant women made crucial but largely invisible contributions to Friedman's monetary theories. Anna Schwartz, a meticulous economic historian, convinced Friedman to expand their project into a monetary history of the United States. Despite providing the foundation through years analyzing banking records and Federal Reserve minutes, she was often relegated to collaborator status rather than recognized as an equal. Rose Friedman, Dorothy Brady, and Margaret Mead were instrumental in developing the permanent income hypothesis that challenged Keynesian economics. This theory showed people base spending on expected long-term income rather than current earnings, explaining behaviors like vacation splurges despite temporary constraints or medical students living frugally despite minimal present income. Though Friedman initially called it our tentative hypothesis, he gradually claimed sole ownership, eventually referring to it as my hypothesis, while developing the manuscript that would restore his academic standing and deliver what he considered a direct blow against the Keynesian consensus. Economic freedom is a necessary condition for political freedom, Friedman argued in his 1962 manifesto, Capitalism and Freedom. This book, initially rejected by publishers and ignored by reviewers, eventually sold over 500,000 copies and transformed public discourse about government's proper role, connecting economic arrangements directly to human liberty. Friedman's approach to education exemplified his thinking. Rather than opposing public education funding, he proposed school vouchers that would maintain government financing while introducing competition. Parents could use these vouchers at any accredited school, creating innovation incentives while ensuring universal access. His pragmatic libertarianism extended to other policies. He proposed private retirement accounts instead of abolishing Social Security, and developed the negative income tax, providing direct cash assistance through the tax code while preserving work incentives, later influencing the earned income tax credit. Friedman's most successful policy campaign targeted military conscription. His research showed the draft imposed massive hidden costs by forcing young men into service at below market wages. This work helped convince President Nixon to end conscription in 1973, demonstrating how Friedman's once radical ideas could reshape institutions when economic analysis aligned with shifting cultural values. The 1970s brought America's worst economic crisis since the Depression, stagflation, the supposedly impossible combination of high inflation and high unemployment. As inflation reached 11% by 1974, Friedman's warnings about inflationary monetary policy gained urgent relevance. His 1967 American Economic Association address had predicted this scenario, introducing the natural rate of unemployment concept and arguing that pushing unemployment below this level would accelerate inflation. When Nixon appointed Friedman's mentor, Arthur Burns, as Federal Reserve Chairman, Friedman initially celebrated. But Burns shocked him by endorsing wage-price controls they had both opposed. In an anguished midnight letter, Friedman expressed feeling betrayed by Burns's reversal. Their relationship cooled as Burns rejected Friedman's monetary explanation for inflation. The controls failed. By 1979, with inflation approaching 11% again, new Fed chairman Paul Volcker shifted to monetarist principles, focusing on controlling money supply. Interest rates soared past 20%, triggering a severe recession but finally breaking inflation. This Volcker shock vindicated Friedman's core insight that controlling money supply was essential to price stability. Friedman's 1975 visit to Chile during Pinochet's military dictatorship became a defining career moment. The 6-day trip occurred after Pinochet had violently overthrown Allende's democratic socialist government. With inflation exceeding 300%, Chilean economists who had studied under Friedman, the Chicago Boys, had gained influence with Pinochet and invited their mentor for consultation. Friedman advised Pinochet to implement economic shock treatment, comparing reform to cutting a dog's tail. Better to make swift changes than prolong pain through gradual adjustments. Within a month, Chile announced a comprehensive program following Friedman's recommendations for rapid privatization, deregulation, and monetary tightening. Throughout his visit, Friedman maintained clinical detachment about Chile's political situation despite human rights violation reports. He focused narrowly on economic policy while taking minimal precautions to avoid appearing to endorse the government. While Chile's economy showed impressive results, protests and criticism forced Friedman to evolve his thinking. By 1981, he acknowledged that political freedom was a necessary condition for the long-term maintenance of economic freedom, a crucial evolution in his understanding of markets and democracy. Friedman's ideas proved persuasive because they matched experience, offered novel solutions to persistent problems, and successfully predicted outcomes when conventional wisdom failed. His influence is evident in central banks worldwide targeting inflation, the expansion of educational choice through charter schools and voucher programs, and the standard practice of floating exchange rates in international finance. Friedman categorized freedom into three types: economic, social/civil, and political. While acknowledging that political freedom could temporarily exist without economic liberty, he maintained that sustaining political freedom ultimately required economic freedom to provide some independent source of authority beyond the state. This insight remains vital in contemporary debates about tech regulation, globalization's limits, and government's role in healthcare. Whatever social and political order emerges next will incorporate elements of his thinking. Though the diminutive economist with the ready smile is gone, his ideas continue to challenge and inspire, providing enduring tools for understanding the relationship between economics and liberty.